south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, what's your take on artificial intelligence? You know that you're a contributor to those algorithms, right? You know, members of the fascist state, like Google, are training you up for AI, or actually they're using you to develop AI. I know, you're thinking, yeah, right, how's that? Well, did you know that every time you see those pop-up windows that show a box of, let's say, 10 squares, and it says, pick out the fire hydrant, or rabbit, or car, or bridge, you know, you have to check the boxes in order to get to the website you're actually searching for. You know what I'm talking about, right? You've probably done it 100 times. Do you know what you're really doing, the sneaky thing that's going on? You're teaching the existing AI system at Google, etc., what, for example, fire hydrants look like to us humans in their various configurations. They're using us to train up and sharpen up their AI systems. Because, you know, there are hundreds of variations of fire hydrants, bridges, bicycles, cars, etc., different colors, shades, sizes, under different lighting and shading conditions, too. And us humans can recognize all of them. Whereas an AI system starts out with just one or two or three different iterations of a fire hydrant. There are millions of iterations. And what those Google and government-ass webs are doing is training up their AI using you as their, in the field, boots on the ground, data gatherer. Pretty creepy, huh? If you don't think it's creepy, then there's something wrong with you. And you thought they were just checking to see if you were a human or not. And how do I know that? Well, it's because some of my best friends are brilliant computer nerds. They're a lot smarter than me. We need guys like that. You know, the often socially inept type. Many are badly groomed, badly dressed guys who don't know the difference. But unfortunately for them, you lose double points when you're both socially inept and you have a bad fashion sense. Well, that was the case up in the first world anyway, but when they end up in Latin America, fashion and social defects and all, they still have that gringo advantage going for them, including love, romance, mating, and dating. And since most geeks and nerds have been rejected romantically and had their self-esteem punctured so repeatedly, whittled down to nothing by rejection in the North American dating scene, believe me, their mating and dating standards are at all-time lows. That means, of course, when they finally land down here in Latin America, they carry their battered and bruised egos with them. I mean, who wouldn't? They're thinking, why would it be any different down here? So it normally takes a good long time to realize they've got the gringo advantage in the mating and dating game, too. Because, you know, if they hook up with the right lady, she'll give them a makeover and they'll clean up rather well. In fact, I remember when I was going to engineering school, I had a steady girlfriend during that whole time. Fairly unusual for engineering students who are mostly nerds. I only got away with it because I played in a band. So I wasn't buried in the basement every night playing around with transistors. I mixed with the nerds and the normal crowd. Oh, and you'll want to hear about my girlfriend. Beautiful Italian girl from Chicago whose daddy was rich, and so she was very spoiled. And me, I was just a poor student with a crappy car, hoping to have enough gas money to get back and forth to university. I remember well when she was 16, her dad bought her a brand new Javelin, American Motors Javelin. Remember those? Anyway, I'll never forget, on top of the refrigerator in the kitchen, her dad, who I believe was mafia connected, had a cookie jar. And I mean, it wasn't like any cookie jar I'd ever seen. It had 10s, 20s, 50s, and 100s in it. Anyway, since I didn't have any extra spending money and she liked to go to nice places, I couldn't afford to do that kind of stuff, so she'd just say, let's go anyway, and dip her hand in there, pull out a 50, whatever. Her dad knew, he didn't care. It was on the house. It was sort of expected when you're an only child and a beautiful girl at that. Back then, we didn't have a term for it, but she's what you'd call high maintenance today. By the way, we were together 3 years, and she dumped me in my fourth year of engineering school for a lawyer who owned a hot, swanky nightclub. Yep, she was super spoiled, all right. Her dad even had a charge account at a bunch of gas stations, so when she'd pull in, she'd just say, charge it to daddy. She was the perfect girlfriend for a broke college kid. And how did I know her dad was connected? Well, every Friday night, he'd have a little get-together in the basement, all his Italian soprano-looking buddies would come over, head right into the basement, which was completely remodeled, I mean elegantly. They'd play cards and smoke stogies and discuss things that were for their ears only. Now get this, the very first time I went over to her house and met her dad. Yeah, I was nervous, all right. You know, kid from a rock band from the wrong side of town and all that. That was the first time I think I ever saw a guy in a $1,000 suit. In those days, that was big money. And man, he was one of those handsome, debonair types, looked like Cesar Romero in his prime in the 1950s, not when he played the Joker on Batman when it was on TV. Anyway, I'll never forget what he said to me the first time I met him. He says, I got two rules when you come over. Besides, of course, the unwritten rule, keep your hands off my daughter, or I'll kill you. Rule number one, you never park in my driveway, where he had a brand new Cadillac and a Chrysler Imperial. You remember those? Number two, never, and I mean never, and man, did he give me a stern look when he said it, never go down into the basement when my friends are over. Scared the piss out of me. Meanwhile, back at engineering school, almost all of my engineering buddies did not have girlfriends. I mean, you know, maybe 100 guys in the class, right? And I was one of the few guys that had a steady girlfriend. A looker at that. Yep, those engineering nerds did drool. You know, college, the fraternities would organize the occasional get-together and dance party, and the engineering guys were always short on dates. And some of these guys, some of the real nerds, never had been on a date before. We're talking college now. Anyway, my engineering buddies were always begging my girlfriend to fix them up on dates. And a few times she did. You know how girls like to be matchmakers. None of her girlfriends lasted beyond the first date. The guys were just too, in the old vernacular, pencil-necked geeks, and thus eccentric. And none of my engineering buddies, I mean none of them, knew how to dance. Not that I did, but hey, at least I'd give it a try. Believe it or not, my girlfriend forced me to take ballroom dancing classes with her. Man, I hated every minute of it, but hey, the things you do for love, right? Anyway, what I'm trying to say is most of the guys in my engineering class were a pathetic bunch when it came to mating, dating, love, and romance. There was almost none. And when that's been the pattern all your life up in the first world, when you end up having a plan B here in Latin America, and believe me, especially with the Bitcoin and crypto thing happening in places like Salvador, Puerto Rico, etc., the nerds are coming down, in some places, piling in. And no matter how shy and timid they might be around women, they find out soon enough it's a different world down here. The gringo advantage rides again. Just saying. All right, switching gears. You know, a lot of people are wondering about that cocaine thing in Latin America, especially South America, where in some countries are the world's largest producers. And when you could buy this stuff on the street for a tenth of what you could get it up in the States, and it's pure, that's what they tell me. I know some people who do it. For one thing, it's so damn cheap, and for some people, they just don't learn. Obviously, it's no good for you. And as far as me, well, if I took this stuff, I'd probably have a stroke, because I'm a high-octane type A personality. You don't need it. That's not to say I didn't try it. Way back in college, I tried it twice. The first time, must not have been the real stuff because nothing happened. Second time, I knew I never wanted it again because I thought I was going to have a freaking heart attack. So then what about the average, let's say, college-age Latin American? Since cocaine's so cheap down here, are they using it like people use it up in the States or like they had been using it up in the States? The answer is a resounding no. Yes, you can get it anywhere, but only the 1% bubble kids, you know, children of the rich, do it with any frequency because they can afford it and it's the hip thing to do. The under 99% of college kids, you know, that's the group that would be most predisposed to take it, right? They don't make any money. They're all broke. So for them, even if they wanted it, it's out of their price range. On top of that, 90% of all the college kids in Latin America go to free public universities, and anything public and free, especially in Latin America, is pretty ratty. If their parents had the money, they'd send them to private school for sure, but they just don't. So neither the parents nor the kids have any disposable income. So even if cocaine in Latin America is a tenth of U.S. prices, it may be tempting for college-age kids because it's the forbidden fruit and all. Maybe they've tried it once or twice at parties, but they don't have the dough to make it a habit. Now, of course, in the upscale parts of big Latin American cities, they've always got a disco and party district. And you know, the guys with the nice cars and the girls who have real bling and authentic designer label stuff, a lot of them are doing cocaine. It's a party thing, and they can afford it. So bottom line, as far as the cocaine production in Latin America, that's where it's all coming from, right? 95% of it's going to the States and Europe. Only a tiny bit of it's used locally. Which brings me to this email. He says, Johnny, I took my kid with me for a week in La Paz, Bolivia. You see, 2 weeks a year, I go with Doctors Without Borders to various parts of the world where the underprivileged and poor folks just can't get medical care at all. He says he's done stints all over South America and Haiti, too. Anyway, he says at nearly 12,000 feet above sea level, La Paz, Bolivia is the highest capital city in the world. He says on previous visits, I'd suffered from splitting headaches for days due to altitude sickness. This last time, however, he says, I decided to handle it the way all the locals do. My son and I went to the market in the Villa Fatima neighborhood and bought coca leaves to chew. They're supposed to help with altitude sickness and a variety of other things. I noticed, he said, there's a touch of lime added. It's citrusy. Though I understand, kind of like designer coffee, they've got different flavorings depending on your taste. He says, yes, coca leaves are legal in Bolivia. It's even guaranteed as a right in the country's constitution. He says in 2009, they wrote into the constitution, quote, the state shall have protective native and ancestral coca as cultural patrimony, a renewable natural resource of Bolivia's biodiversity. It's a component of social cohesion in Bolivia. In its natural state, it is not a narcotic, unquote. That's the translation of the part of the constitution talking about coca in English. Then he says, popular to what most first world people think, chewing coca leaves do not get you high. It's more like coffee, a mild stimulant that can suppress fatigue, hunger, pain, including headaches, and altitude sickness. Though it did leave me with the feeling of getting away with something cool and memorable, stories to tell, you know, trying things that are illegal in your country but legal in others. Then he says, the effect of chewing natural coca leaves is in no way comparable to the effects of cocaine. I would know. He says, one of the unspoken truths about many of us doctors is that we have addictive personalities and we're under a lot of pressure and stress. And with extremely easy access to prescription drugs, if your mind isn't straight, it's always a temptation. So you might be wondering, did I, Johnny, ever try those coca leaves? Yeah, I think I did in either Peru or Colombia, long, long time ago. In fact, I remember I checked into a very nice 4-star hotel. It wasn't an American first world franchise hotel like a Clarion Suites, Hyatt, or Hilton. But it was really nice and elegant. And right on the table in the lobby, they had a bowl full of these green little shavings. When I was standing at the desk waiting to check in, I saw the bellboy go over and take a pinch. Hard to believe they'd have a bowl of that stuff right out in the hotel lobby, but there it was. Of course, I didn't know what that stuff was till some guy told me. Yep, the doctor's right, you know. That and a cup of coffee in the morning, and you're ready to do some work. A pinch of that stuff is somewhat like a shot of espresso. Though I understand a lot of the farm workers and such will chew on that stuff all day, like cowboys and carnies do with chewing tobacco. Now, that's a disgusting habit. Though I guess it's similar to drinking 8 or 10 cups of coffee a day. That happens. That's not unusual. I know some people who live on coffee. I'm sure you do, too. By the way, did you ever try chewing tobacco? They call it chew or chaw. Oh, I tried it just once, and I'll never do that again. I know a doctor, an MD, who chews that stuff, and he's not even a horse doctor. Well, come to think of it, maybe he is. He's 60, he smokes, drinks, is 50 pounds overweight, and has had 2 heart operations already, but he still smokes, drinks, and chaws. And his practice in Chicago is booming. He told me Americans are so out of shape, they like to see that their doctor's kind of in the same boat, so he only scolds them lightly. They like that their doctor has his vices. Go figure, huh? I think he's full of shit. Question is, would you go to a dentist who had rotten teeth? All right, let's take another email. This should be of interest to almost everyone making a plan B here in Latin America. It comes from one of our expat insider seminar attendees from some years back, the Drifter, who's living in Latin America now. In fact, he's a repeat offender. He says, hey, Johnny, I'm going to make more than the usual calls back to the States in the near future, as in somewhere between a dozen to maybe 3 dozen calls per week. Can you tell me what you think's the cheapest platform out there for doing this? I'm assuming it would be through using a laptop. Signed, Drifter. You know, Drifter, my stock answer is to use the Signal app. You've heard me talk about that many times on the show. Now, Signal, like WhatsApp, is free, but it's encrypted end-to-end and no one stores your info, specifically designed to replace services like WhatsApp that have backdoors where people and governments can get your data. You know, they save it all. Of course, that means the other people you'll be calling have to have the Signal app too. I'm assuming not all of them do. Many people don't even know what the hell it is. Now, your second best choice, and it'll cost you a little money, not much, maybe $40 to $50 a year, is the Magic Jack. Just do a search. You'll probably get it on Amazon. That's Magic Jack. That thing's been around for a while, and it's perfected. Believe me, the original Magic Jack plugged into your computer's USB port and piggybacked on its internet connection while keeping your same phone number. And there's a standard phone jack on the other side of the device that let you plug in the phone of your choice and make calls. It was a simple solution, but required you to leave your computer on all day and all night, assuming you wanted to be able to receive and send calls at all times. But now they've got a Magic Jack Plus and a really small Magic Jack Go for traveling. And now an iPhone and Android app for your phone. Now, I remember around 20 years ago, before there was any kind of WhatsApp, Signal, or any of that stuff, even smartphones. Let's see now. The first iPhone was what, in 2007? Exactly the same timeline when teenage boys and girls started mutilating and cutting themselves, and teenage suicides shot up over 400%. Yeah, right, just a coincidence. Right when the iPhone and social media came out. But I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, the Magic Jack. You know, when it first came out, it was a gimmick and dropped out a lot. I should know, I had one. Yes, it was frustrating in those days. Remember going into an elevator when you had one of the earlier cell phones that would drop out or go into a parking garage or basement? Of course, that was a great excuse if you didn't want to talk to anyone or you wanted to end a conversation. Remember that? Oops, you're cutting out. Bad connection. Talk to you later. As for Magic Jack, it's not like the old days. It's a solid service now. Even if you're way out in the boonies and have a crap connection, as long as you're able to stream something like Netflix, your connection is more than fast enough to use Magic Jack. Oh, and one last thing. I remember calls back to the States from Latin America were free using Magic Jack. But if you called other places, like in Europe or Australia, there was a small, additional, permitted extra charge. But it was so much cheaper than your regular international phone service. All right, talking about how crappy healthcare systems are up in the first world, and why having a Plan B is looking better than ever. This one comes from Mr. D. He says, from the Socialist Republic of Montgomery County, Maryland. He says, Johnny, check out this link. And he sends me a link to a BBC undercover report that says that the UK's biggest general practice hospital chain, it says some days there are no real doctors available at all. Now, remember, we're talking about national healthcare here, a system lots of people up by you think could be worth converting to. As for me, I'm all for gutting big pharma and the insurance companies. But man, letting a government run national healthcare, that's a kiss of death too. Good idea? Terrible execution, since everything the government touches turns to shit. Anyway, I just want to read you a tiny bit of this article. It says, an undercover BBC investigation has shown light on the unbelievable workings of the UK's biggest chain of GP practices and hospitals. Operose Health, which runs 70 national healthcare clinics in the UK, the probe revealed no doctors at all, just their cheaper alternatives, physician assistants. It says receptionists were left to comfort patients, often crying over the phone in pain, begging to see a doctor, but there were none on the premises. One senior medical specialist said, quote, you got 20,000 patients and not a single doctor seeing patients. That's unbelievable and completely unsafe. Then it says, patients are often told the doctors are not physically here, but technically here, being that they were online somewhere. Bottom line, it's about the money, and England's national healthcare system is broke. The fact is, GP docs earn about $150 an hour. Physician assistants earn a fraction of that, about £27,000 a year to start, $40,000 a year. Anyway, Mr. D, who sent me this link, has something to say about that. He says, Johnny, that's the type of medical services many leftists and pot-lick-titians want us to have. He says, Johnny, I'm one of those dreaded government employees and have one of the better healthcare plans. And my wife just happens to work for our healthcare provider. She's been trying to see her lady doctor for 4 months now and keeps getting her appointments canceled and shifted forward. And Johnny, these are just phone consults too. She can't even get to see a doctor in person. He says, how does a doctor check lady bits over the phone, I wonder? Our Plan B cannot come fast enough, Johnny. He signs it, all the best, Mr. D, from the Socialist Republic of Montgomery County, Maryland. All right, now here's a question that comes up quite frequently. I think we talked about it a little bit on a previous show. And here's the proof that it really is sort of a problem for people trying to get the hell out of Dodge. This one's from Jeff. He says, About your next seminar, Johnny. Sounds good. I'm in. But here's the thing. I've tried talking to my wife about how our freedoms have been eroding for years. I even suggested her reading Atlas Shrugged, maybe watching the three-part Atlas Shrugged movies, too. I've suggested she talk to folks that have left the country and to listen to your show. No dice. She's very intelligent and aware of the things that are happening before our eyes, but doesn't really care. He says, I'm sure it goes a lot deeper than that, probably more fear-based than ignorance. He says, I hate asking for free advice from you, but I'm sure you've seen this 1,000 times before. Do reluctant spouses ever turn around, or is this just the way it is? Is there anything that you know of that I can have her read or watch to change your mind? She always seems to listen to other people's suggestions way before mine. Thanks in advance for the free advice, signed, Jeffrey. Well, Jeffrey, you're absolutely right. I've heard this 1,000 times before. And you're also absolutely right about the fact that usually the people closest to you will ask you for suggestions, but they'll never take them. Happens all the time with me and my family. And as for suggestions, what she might listen to or read, you have to try to switch her from the mainstream media outlets to alternative media outlets, which wokesters think are fringe, but they're definitely not. You and I know the real free press is the alternative press. There are lots of alternative YouTube channels out there, too. However, these days, a lot of people don't read too much or don't have the time to read long articles or books. That's all right. You can listen to YouTubes and podcasts. Here are the ones I listen to, the ones I recommend in no particular order. As for podcasts and YouTubes, I recommend Lex Friedman, Brett Weinstein's Dark Horse podcast, The Gary Null Show on PRN, Jordan Peterson, Gad Saad, that's G-A-D-S-A-A-D, Michael Malice, M-A-L-I-C-E, Sam Harris, and Doug Casey. Oh, and I listen to Joe Rogan too, except when he has comics, comedians, or sports guests. Not that some of them aren't interesting, they are, but who's got time for all that? That usually means I listen to about 1 out of 5 of his shows. Anyway, wherever you are or out and about, you can always listen to a podcast. You don't have to stare at the talking heads on the screen. Just set your smartphone on the kitchen countertop while you're cooking dinner or when you're out and about, listen with earphones. And by the way, if you use the Brave browser, B-R-A-V-E, you won't get any pop-up windows or commercials. I'll tell you, isn't that beyond annoying? Watching a YouTube and all of a sudden it cuts into a commercial? Use the Brave browser, and better yet, Brave browser with a VPN. You'll never get an ad or get tracked again. The Brave browser is free, and a VPN, that'll cost you maybe $30 to $50 a year, but man, is it worth it. If you're wondering, I use the ProtonMail VPN. Anyway, Jeffrey, it's a common problem when you're thinking about that plan B and your wife or better half is reluctant to go along. I've found over the years, it's overwhelmingly the woman of the pair who's the reluctant one. Though, the way things are now, following the lockdowns, the problems with the jabs, and the iron fist of Big Brother, even the most reluctant, resistant ones, are getting the hint that the problems are toxic and irreversible. So, Jeffrey, I'm willing to bet that your wife really does believe that things are going downhill, they're bad and getting worse. She's sad about that, right? But I bet her problem is she's wondering if it's any better anywhere else. And you know, with all the bad publicity Latin America has been getting all these years in the lame street media, it takes some convincing to prove otherwise. And no matter how many articles they read or how many podcasts they see, proving the contrary, showing how nice it could be living in Latin America. Never mind. Many people are still conflicted about it, even while their significant other might be gung-ho. Though one of the best ways to get your significant other to come around is to get boots on the ground, the right kind of boots on the ground. And best by far is to get that fire hose treatment. Come down to one of my expat insider seminars. It's simple. The more people you hang with and meet while you're down here, the more comfortable you'll be with getting the hell out of Dodge. So I'm thinking about maybe another expat insider seminar in October. We'll switch things up a bit. Hang out for a week in the DR, the Dominican Republic this time. Give you a totally different perspective on Latin American island life. And of course, get all of the essential information about Guatemala, Salvador, and Central and South America too. So anyway, I'm putting together a list. Let me know. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, if you're interested in getting on the early bird seminar list. And finally, this email from Corey in Canada. He says, Johnny, I recently left Canada to work construction in the Cayman Islands. I could not stand the Canadian government overreach anymore. I'm looking at setting up a plan B and getting residency elsewhere via property investment. I'm thinking Latin America. possibly Nicaragua, since I've heard a minimum property investment there is quite affordable. Your thoughts? Signed, getting the hell out of Canada, Corey. Well, Corey, I think we have to do a phone consult. There are things you have to know about Nicaragua if that's your first choice. Like the fact that the president's a scumbag dictator. Oh, and just last week, Nicaraguan police took control of 5 municipalities run by a party opposed to President Daniel Ortega, kicking out democratically elected leaders and installing his own ruling party sympathizers in their place. In fact, in 2021, Ortega actually outlawed the opposition, the opposing political parties. By the way, last year when there were local and municipal elections being held, opposition candidates were arrested and some have been tried for treason. And even though Nicaragua doesn't have a great infrastructure, it's all right, but it's not up to Guatemala or Panama by any means. Still, the government is very powerful. In 2020, Nicaragua's National Assembly approved a law that would give the government of President Daniel Ortega the power to monitor people, businesses, and organizations that receive any kind of funding from overseas, even from groups that receive money from charity. They'll be checking the books. Anyway, the so-called law for regulation of foreigners, man, that sounds ominous, doesn't it? Was carried by a large percentage in the legislative body, which is 100% controlled by Ortega's Sandinista Front Party. So basically, this law requires any Nicaraguan citizen or foreigner working for companies, foundations, or foreign organizations to register with the Interior Ministry, report monthly on their income and spending, and provide prior notice of what any received foreign funds will be spent on. And the law establishes fines, sanctions, and arrests for those who do not register. How about this quote from Sandinista lawmaker Wilmaro Gutierrez, one of those who pushed the law through Congress? He refers to the opponents of Ortega and the government as a pack of corrupt delinquents. Meanwhile, human rights defenders say our concern is that the new law ends up being another tool of repression. You think? On a lighter note, the good news is that there are only currently 113 opposing party political prisoners in the slammer, with many on hunger strikes and some have even sewed their lips shut in protest. On a positive note, Nicaragua is a very inexpensive gulagger country to live. And they just made a treaty with Russia allowing military training maneuvers and exercises. There goes the neighborhood.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.